Welcome to the Dhammasukha Meditation Center. Today is July 28, 2014. And we'll be doing from the Majjhima Nikaya number 95, the Chanki Sutta with Chanki.
Thus have I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was wandering in the Kosalan country with a large sangha of monks. 500. I love that. And eventually he arrived at the Kusalan Brahmin village of Opasada. There the Blessed One stayed in the God's Grove, the Sala Tree Grove, to the north of Opasada. Now on that occasion the Brahmin Chanki was ruling over Opasada, a crown property abounding with living things, rich in grassland, woodlands, waterways, and grain, a royal endowment, a sacred grant given to him by King Pasenadi of Kosala. The Brahmin householders of Opasada heard the recluse Gotama, the son of the Sakyans, went forth from the Sakyan clan, has been wandering in the country of the Videyans with a large sangha of monks, with 500 monks. Now a good report of Master Gotama has been spread to this effect. The Blessed One is accomplished, fully awakened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, awakened and blessed. He declares this world with its gods, its Brahmas, its Maras and its Brahmas, this generation with its recluses and Brahmins, with its princes and its people, which he has self-realized with direct knowledge. He teaches the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing. And he reveals a holy life that is utterly perfect and pure. Now, it is good to see such arahats. Then the Brahmin householder of Opasada set forth from Opasada in groups and bands and headed northwards toward the God's Grove, the Sala Tree Grove. Now on that occasion, the Brahmin Chanki had retired to the upper story of his palace for his midday rest. Then he saw the Brahmin householders of Opasada setting forth from Opasada in groups and bands and heading northwards to the God's Grove, the Sala Tree Grove. When he saw them, he asked his minister, good minister, why are the Brahmin householders of Opasada setting forth from Opasada in groups and bands and heading northward to the God's Grove, the Sala Tree Grove? Sir, there is a recluse Gotama, the son of the Sakyans, who went forth from the Sakyan clan, who is wandering in the Kosalan country. They are going to see that, Master Gotama. Then, good minister, go to the Brahmin householders of Opasada and tell them, sirs, the Brahmin Chanki says this. Please wait, sirs. The Brahmin Chanki will also go to see the recluse Gotama. Yes, sir, the minister replied, and he went to the Brahmin householders of Opasada and gave them the message. Now on that occasion, 500 Brahmins had various states were staying in Opasada for some business or other. they heard the Brahman Chanki, it is said, is going to see the recluse Gotama. Then they went to the Brahman Chanki and asked him, "Sir, is it true that you're going to see the recluse Gotama?" "Yes, it is, sirs. I'm going to see the recluse Gotama." "Sir, do not go to see the recluse Gotama. It is not proper for Master Chanki for you to go see the recluse Gotama. Rather, it is proper for the recluse Gotama to come see you." Political correctness, even during the time of the Buddha. "For you, sir, are well born on both sides, of pure maternal and paternal descent 7 generations back, unassailable and impeccable in respect of birth. Since that is so, Master Chanki, it is not proper for you to go see the recluse Gotama. Rather, it's proper for the recluse Gotama to come to see you. You, sir, are rich, with great wealth and great possessions. You, sir, are a master of the 3 Vedas with their vocabularies, liturgy, phonology, and etymology, and the histories as the 5th. Skilled in philology and grammar, you are fully versed in natural philosophy and in the marks of a great man. You, sir, are handsome, comely, and graceful, possessing supreme beauty of complexion, with sublime beauty and sublime presence, remarkable to behold. You, sir, are virtuous, mature in virtue, possessing mature virtue. You, sir, are a good speaker with a good delivery. You speak words that are courteous, distinct, flawless, and communicating the meaning. You, sir, teach the teachers of many, and you teach the recitation of the hymns to 300 Brahman students. You, sir, are honored, respected, revered, venerated, and esteemed by King Pasanadi of Kosala. You, sir, are honored, respected, revered, and venerated, and esteemed by the Brahman Pokarasati. You, sir, rule over Opasada, a crown property abounding in living things, a sacred grant given to you by the King Pasanadi of Kosala. Since this is so, Master Chanki, it is not proper for you to go see the recluse Gotama. Rather, it is proper for the recluse Gotama to come see you. When this was said, the Brahman Chanki told those Brahmins, "Now, sirs, hear from me why it is proper for me to go seek Master Gotama, and why it is not proper for Master Gotama to come see me. Sirs, the recluse Gotama is well born on both sides, of pure maternal and paternal descent 7 generations back, unassailable and impeccable in respect to birth. Since this is so, sirs, it is not proper for Master Gotama to come see me, but rather it is proper for me to see Master Gotama. Sirs, the recluse Gotama went forth abandoning much gold and bullion stored away in vaults and in lofts. Sirs, the recluse Gotama went forth from the home life into homelessness while still young, a black-haired young man endowed with the blessings of youth in the prime of life. You probably know this, I don't know, but most of the Brahmins, they get married when they're young, they have a family, then they get to be about 60 years old with gray hair, and they give all of that away and then become ascetics. So to have somebody be 29 years old and start that is very unusual. Sirs, the recluse Gotama shaved off his hair and beard and put on the yellow robe and went forth from the home life into homelessness, though his mother and father wished otherwise and wept with tearful faces. Sirs, the recluse Gotama is handsome, comely, and graceful, possessing supreme beauty of complexion, with sublime beauty and sublime presence, remarkable to behold. Sirs, the recluse Gotama is virtuous, with noble virtue, with wholesome virtue, possessing wholesome virtue. Sirs, the recluse Gotama is a good speaker, with a good delivery. He speaks words that are courteous, distinct, flawless, and communicate the meaning. Sirs, the recluse Gotama is a teacher of the teachers of many. Sir, the recluse Gotama is free from sensual lust without personal vanity. Sirs, the recluse Gotama holds the doctrine of the moral efficacy of action. The doctrine of the moral efficacy of deeds. He does not seek any harm for the line of Brahmins. Sir, the recluse Gotama went forth from an aristocratic family, from one of the original noble families. Sirs, the recluse Gotama went forth from a rich family, from a family of great wealth and great possessions. Sirs, people come from remote kingdoms and remote districts to question the recluse Gotama. Sirs, many thousands of deities have gone for refuge for life to the recluse Gotama. Sirs, a good report of the recluse Gotama has been spread to this effect, that the Blessed One is fully awakened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and human, awakened and blessed. Sirs, the recluse Gotama possesses the 32 marks of a great man. Sirs, the king Sinaya Bimbisara of Magadha and his wife and children have gone for refuge for life to the recluse Gotama. Sirs, King Pasanadi of Kosala and his wife and children have gone for refuge for life to the recluse Gotama. Sirs, the Brahmin Pokorasati and his wife and children have gone for refuge for life for the recluse Gotama. Sirs, the recluse Gotama has arrived at Opasada and is living at Opasada, the God's Grove, the Sala Tree Grove, to the north of Opasada. Now, any recluses and Brahmins that have... Any recluses or Brahmins that come to our town are our guests, and guests should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated by us. Since the recluse Gotama has arrived at Opasada, he is our guest, and as our guest should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated by us. Since this is so, it is not proper for Master Gotama to come see me. Rather, it is proper for me to go see Master Gotama. Sirs, this much is the praise of Master Gotama that I have learned. But the praise of Master Gotama is not limited to that. for the praise of Master Gotama is immeasurable. Since Master Gotama possesses each one of these factors, it is not proper for me to come see him, or for him to come see me. Rather, it is proper for me to go see Master Gotama. Therefore, sirs, let all of us go to see the recluse Gotama. Then the Brahmin Chaki, together with a large company of Brahmin, went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side. Now on that occasion, the Blessed One was seated finishing some amiable talk with some very senior Brahmins. At the time, sitting in the assembly was a young Brahmin student. Young, shaven head, 16 years old. And he was a master of the three Vedas with the vocabularies, liturgy, phonology, and etymology, and the histories as a fifth. Skilled in philology and grammar, he was fully versed in natural philosophy and in the marks of a great man. While the very senior Brahmins were conversing with the Blessed One, he repeatedly broke in and interrupted their talk. Then the Blessed One rebuked the young Brahmin student thus, "Let not the venerable student break in and interrupt the talk of the very senior Brahmins while they are conversing." That's always the way it is, especially with monks. The senior monk talks. Junior monks are quiet. "Let the venerable student wait until the talk is finished." When this was said, the Brahmin Chaki said to the Blessed One, "Let not Master Gotama rebuke the young student. The Brahmin student is a clansman. He's very learned. He has good delivery. He is wise. He's capable of taking part in a discussion with Master Gotama." Then the Blessed One thought, "Surely, since the Brahmins honored him thus, the Brahmin student must be accomplished in the scriptures of the three Vedas." Then the Brahmin student thought, "When the recluse Gotama catches my eye, I shall ask him a question." Then, knowing with his own mind the thought of the Brahmin student, the Blessed One turned his eye towards him. When the Brahmin student thought, "The recluse Gotama has turned towards me, suppose I ask him a question." Then he said to the Blessed One, "Master Gotama, in regard to the ancient Brahmatic hymns that have come down through oral tradition, preserved in the collections, the Brahmins come to the definite conclusion only this is true and anything else is wrong. What does Master Gotama say about this? How then, student, among the Brahmins, is there even a single Brahmin who says thus, 'I know this, I see this, only this is true and anything else is wrong'? No, Master Gotama. How then, student, among the Brahmins, is there even a single teacher or a single teacher's teacher, back to the seventh generation of teachers, who says thus, 'I know this, I see this, only this is true and anything else is wrong'? No, Master Gotama. How then, student, the ancient Brahmin seers, the creators of the hymns, the composers of the hymns, whose ancient hymns that were formerly chanted, uttered, and compiled, the Brahmins nowadays still chant and repeat, repeating what was spoken and reciting what was recited. Did even these ancient Brahmin seers say thus, "We know this, we see this, only this is true and anything else is wrong"? No, Master Gotama. So, student, it seems that among the Brahmins, there's not even a single Brahmin who says, "I know this, I see this, only this is true and anything else is wrong." And among the Brahmins, there's not even a single teacher or a single teacher's teacher back to the seventh generation of teachers who says thus, "I know this, I see this, only this is true and anything else is wrong." And the ancient Brahmin seers, the creators of the hymns, the composers of the hymns, even these ancient Brahmin seers did not say thus, "We know this, we see this, only this is true and anything else is wrong." Suppose there were a file of blind men in touch with the next. The first does not see, the middle does not see, and the last one does not see. So too, student, in regard to their statement, the Brahmins seem to be like a file of blind men. The first does not see, the middle does not see, and the last does not see. What do you think, student? That being so, does not the faith of the Brahmins turn out to be groundless? The Brahmins honor this not only out of faith, Master Gotama, they also honor it as an oral tradition. Student, first you took the stand on faith, now you speak of oral tradition. There are these five things, student, that may turn out in two different ways here and now. What five? Faith, approval, oral tradition, reason, cogitation, and reflective acceptance of a view. These five things may turn out in two different ways here and now. Now, something may be fully accepted out of faith, yet it may be empty, hollow, and false. But sometimes something else may not fully be accepted out of faith, yet it may be factual, true, and unmistaken. Again, something may be fully approved of, or well transmitted, or well cogitated, or well reflected upon, yet it may be empty, hollow, and false. But something else may not be well reflected upon, yet it may be factual, true, and unmistaken. Under these conditions, it is not proper for a wise man who preserves truth to come to the definite conclusion, "Only this is true and anything else is wrong." But Master Gotama, in what way is there the preservation of truth? How does one preserve truth? We ask Master Gotama about the preservation of truth. If a person has faith, student, he preserves truth when he says, "My truth, or my faith is thus." But he does not yet come to the definite conclusion, "Only this is true and anything else is wrong." In this way, student, there is the preservation of truth. In this way, he preserves truth. In this way, we describe the preservation of truth. But as yet, there is no discovery of truth. If a person approves something, if he receives an oral tradition, if he reaches a conclusion based on reason cogitation, if he gains a reflective acceptance of the truth, he preserves truth when he says, my reflective acceptance of a view is thus. But he does not yet come to the definite conclusion, only this is true and anything else is wrong. In this way too, student, there is the preservation of truth. In this way, he preserves the truth. In this way, we describe the preservation of truth. But as yet, there is no discovery of truth. In that way, Gotama, there is the preservation of truth. In that way, one preserves truth. In that way, we recognize the preservation of truth. But in what way, Master Gotama, is there the discovery of truth? In what way does one discover truth? We ask Master Gotama about the discovery of truth. Here, student, a monk may be living in dependence on a small village or town. Then a householder or householder's son goes to him and investigates him in regard to three kinds of states: in regard to states based on greed, in regard to states based on hate, in regard to states based on delusion. Remember, that is describing craving. Are there in this Venerable One any states based on greed, such that with his mind obsessed by those states, while not knowing he might say, I know, or while not seeing he might say, I see, or he might urge others to act in a way that would lead to their harm and suffering for a long time? As he investigates him, he comes to know there are no such states based on greed in this Venerable One. The bodily behavior and the verbal behavior of this Venerable One are not those of one who's affected by greed. And the Dhamma that has this Venerable One, he teaches, is one teaches is profound. Hard to see, hard to understand, peaceful and sublime, unattainable by mere reasoning, subtle to be experienced by the wise. This Dhamma cannot be easily taught by one who is affected by greed. When he has investigated him, and has seen that he is purified from states based on greed, he next investigates him in regard to states based on hate. Are there in this Venerable One any states based on hate, such that with his mind obsessed by these states, he might urge others to act in a way that would lead to their harm and suffering for a long time? As he investigates him, he comes to know there are no such states based on hate in this Venerable One. The bodily behavior, the verbal behavior of this Venerable One are not those of one affected by hate. And the Dhamma that this Venerable One teaches is profound to be experienced by the wise. This Dhamma cannot easily be taught by one affected by hate. When he has investigated him and has seen that he is purified from states based on hate, he next investigates him in regard to states based on delusion. are there in this Venerable One? Any states based on delusion such that with his mind obsessed by these states, he might urge others to act in a way that would lead to their harm and suffering for a long time. As he investigates him, he comes to know there are no such states based on delusion in this Venerable One. The bodily behavior, the verbal behavior and of this Venerable One are not those of one affected by delusion. And the Dhamma that the Venerable One teaches is profound, to be experienced by the wise. This Dhamma cannot easily be taught by one affected by delusion. When he has investigated him and he has seen that he is purified from states based on delusion, then he places faith in him. Filled with faith, he visits him. He pays respect to him. Having paid respect to him, he gives ear. When he gives ear, he hears the Dhamma. Having heard the Dhamma, he memorizes it and examines the meaning of the teaching as he has memorized. When he examines their meaning, he gains a reflective acceptance of those teachings. When he's gained a reflective acceptance of those teachings, enthusiasm springs up. When enthusiasm has sprung up, he applies his mindfulness. Having applied his mindfulness, he scrutinizes. Having scrutinized, he strives. Resolutely striving, he realizes with the body the supreme truth and sees it by penetrating it with wisdom. In this way, student, there is the discovery of truth. In this way, one discovers truth. In this way, we describe the discovery of truth. But as yet, there is no final arrival at truth. In that way, Master Gotama, there is the discovery of truth. In that way, one discovers truth. In that way, we recognize the discovery of truth. Just so you know, I read this sutta to some college professors, and they took notes and wrote down, and they said, that is exactly how we want to teach this. But in what way, Master Gotama, is there the final arrival at truth? In what way does one finally arrive at truth? We ask Master Gotama about the final arrival at truth. The final arrival at truth, student, lies in the repetition, development, and cultivation of those same things. In this way, student, there is the final arrival at truth. In this way, one finally arrives at truth. In this way do we describe the final arrival at truth. In that way, Master Gotama, there is the final arrival at truth. In that way, one finally arrives at truth. In that way, we recognize the final arrival at truth. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for the final arrival at truth? We ask Master Gotama about the things most helpful for the final arrival at truth. Striving is most helpful for the final arrival at truth. If one does not strive, use right effort, one will not finally arrive at truth. But because one strives, he does finally arrive at truth. That is why striving is most helpful for finally arriving at truth. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for striving? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for striving. Scrutiny is most helpful for striving. If one does not scrutinize, one will not strive. But because one scrutinizes, one strives. That is why scrutiny is most helpful for striving. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for scrutiny? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for scrutiny. Application of mindfulness is most helpful for scrutiny. If one does not apply one's mindfulness, one will not scrutinize. But because one applies mindfulness, one scrutinizes. That's why the application of mindfulness is most helpful for scrutiny. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for the application of mindfulness? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for the application of mindfulness. Enthusiasm is most helpful for the application of mindfulness. If one does not arouse enthusiasm, one will not apply their mindfulness. But because one arouses enthusiasm, one applies their mindfulness. That is why it is most helpful for the application of mindfulness. But Master Gotama, what is helpful for zeal? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for zeal. Reflective acceptance of the teaching is most helpful for enthusiasm, student. If one does not gain a reflective acceptance of the teaching, enthusiasm will not spring up. But because one gains a reflective acceptance of the teaching, enthusiasm springs up. That is why reflective acceptance of the teaching is most helpful for enthusiasm. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for the reflective acceptance of the teaching? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for the reflective acceptance of the teachings. Examination of the meaning is most helpful for a reflective acceptance of the teachings. If one does not examine their meaning, one will not gain a reflective acceptance of the teachings. But because one examines their meaning, one gains a reflective acceptance of the teachings. That is why examination of the meaning is most helpful for reflective acceptance of the teachings. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for examination of the meaning? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for examination of meaning. Memorizing the teaching is most helpful for examining the meaning. If one does not memorize a teaching, one will not examine the meaning because one memorizes the teaching, one examines the meaning. In Burma, they have, I think it's getting close to 20 monks that have memorized the entire Tipitaka and taken tests on it. And they have to pass by 90%. The first monk that had done it after the long time of no one doing it was called the Mingun Sayadaw. And I had a chance to meet him and spend a little time with him, asking him questions. It took him 19 years to memorize that. Then the competition started. And they have it down is 8 years. They memorize all of that stuff in 8 years. That's really remarkable. And you know how you think about a test? Oh, you go to college and you got these tests that last 4 hours and you feel like you're wrung out by the time the test is done. Well, these tests that they have to take, they last for 30 days, 10 hours a day. Half of it is oral, half of it is written. No, absolutely not. But what Master Gotama is most helpful for memorizing the teaching? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for memorizing the teaching. Hearing the Dhamma is most helpful for memorizing the teaching. If one does not hear the Dhamma, one will not memorize the teaching, but because one hears the Dhamma, one memorizes the teaching. Memorizing the teaching for you would be the five precepts, the four foundations of mindfulness, things like that, the hindrances, whatever. That is why hearing the Dhamma is most helpful for memorizing the teaching. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for hearing the Dhamma? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for hearing the Dhamma. Giving ear is most helpful for hearing the Dhamma. If one does not give ear, one will not hear the Dhamma. But because one gives ear, one hears the Dhamma. That is why giving ear is most helpful for hearing the Dhamma. Giving ear means listening very attentively, not letting your mind ho-hum around. Now, you can attain Nibbana by hearing the Dhamma if you give ear and you understand what the teaching is about. And that happened with the first discourse that the Buddha gave. And it happens sometimes. If somebody is really interested in, let's say, how the links of dependent origination work, and they really listen closely to how it is described in the suttas, they can become a sotapanna by listening to that, because their understanding is very good. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for giving ear? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for giving ear. Paying respect is most helpful for giving ear, student. If one does not pay respect, one will not give ear. But because one pays respect, one gives ear. That is why paying respect is most helpful for giving ear. Listening attentively, respecting what's being said. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for paying respect? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for paying respect. Visiting a teacher is most helpful for paying respect. If one does not visit a teacher, one will not pay respect to him. But because one visits a teacher, one pays respect to him. That is why visiting is most helpful for paying respect. But what, Master Gotama, is most helpful for visiting? We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for visiting. Faith is most helpful for visiting. If faith In a teacher does not arise, one will not visit him. But because faith in a teacher arises, one visits him. That's why faith is most helpful for visiting. So we just went in a great big circle. And that's how you learn the Dhamma. We ask Master Gotama about the preservation of truth, and Master Gotama answered about the preservation of truth. We approve of and accept that answer, and we are satisfied. We ask Master Gotama about the discovery of truth, and Master Gotama answered about the discovery of truth. We approve of and accept that answer, so we are satisfied. We ask Master Gotama about the final arrival at truth, and Master Gotama answered about the final arrival at truth. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. We ask Master Gotama about the thing most helpful for the final arrival at truth. And Master Gotama answered about the thing most helpful for the final arrival at truth. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we're satisfied. Whatever we ask Master Gotama about, that he has answered. We approve of and accept that answer, so we're satisfied. Formerly, Master Gotama, we used to think, who are those bald-pated recluses, those swarthy menial offspring of the kinsmen feet, that they would understand the Dhamma? But Master Gotama has inspired in me a love for recluses, and confidence in recluses, and reverence for recluses. Magnificent, Master Gotama, magnificent. From today, let Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life. Interesting. Huh? Yeah. How it works. And the memorizing, the thing you do in the morning with the precepts, you should have that memorized. And when you get off retreat, I highly suggest every morning you take the precepts. Not as some kind of rite and ritual and just run it through your mind like it's nothing, but as a reminder to keep your precepts during the day. They're very, very important to keep. They are a kind of protection. If you keep your precepts, you are not ever going to die from an accident. You will die a natural death when the time is right. Anyway, why don't we share some merit? May suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear-struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we've thus acquired for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha's dispensation. Sadhu.